Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to the Intercooler Podcast.
Hi everyone, this is episode 78. I'm Dan Prosser, joined as ever by Andrew Frankel. Now Andrew, we're doing one of those podcasts where we talk about lots of different bits and pieces because there's been plenty happening. It's Monday morning as we record this after the Russian Grand Prix. What a blinding race that was. And another sort of chapter in this spectacular 2021 season that we're having. I can't remember enjoying F1 as much as I am this season.
No, I mean, it's like all those rubbish seasons. It's like kind of like payback for all of them. It's just like the gods have just sort of said, okay, guys, we realise you've had it a bit, a bit raw, so we're going to just chuck everything at you. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, I was quite literally on the edge of the sofa shouting at the screen in the last two laps because, I mean, I was absolutely certain the moment that Lewis ducked into the pits that race was Lando's because Crofty or somebody in commentary said he can lose 6 seconds a lap and still win this race. So I thought, well, he's done it. Mercedes have just completely arsed it up and they've given Lando the win. And I was just so happy. And then, oh dear. It was awful to watch. I mean, I say it was awful. I'm very happy that Lewis won and massive congratulations to him on his 100th. But I'm afraid every atom in my body was rooting for Lando. And it was just soul destroying, wasn't it?
Even when Lewis was having his old slicks replaced with Inters, he was saying, it stopped raining.
Yes.
His team came on and said, there's more coming.
Yes.
So it was such a touch and go decision. And less than that, 30 seconds later, there's a shot looking down a long straight. And it was just a deluge. It was chucking it down. And as soon as you saw that shot, you just knew that Lewis had it. He also had a sort of 50 second gap behind him. I had no idea how they managed to pull that out between them, but
I just lost track. I mean, how did Max end up at second?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's the other thing I want to talk about is it was a chaotic, frenetic race, particularly over the last few laps. Max started right at the back.
Yeah.
Lewis got swamped at the start because he was being very cautious. And yet, who is it that comes out on top first and second? It's Lewis and Max.
You see, now, the question you should ask me now is, has anyone ever actually won a race from the back of the grid? And the answer to that is, I don't know.
I think they have.
But who and where and when?
I feel like Kimi did it.
I know that John Watson did something absolutely amazing back in the, it'll be late 70s or early 80s. He came from have you got it?
Well, I found an article entitled, Five Drivers Who Won From the Back of the Grid.
Is it all in Formula One? I just want people listening to this to know the intensive research that we do before we go into these podcasts.
Okay.
It's not like we just sort of make them up on the spot. Sorry, go on.
Michael Schumacher, Belgian Grand Prix, 1995. He started 16th.
That doesn't sound like the back of the grid to me.
Well,
hang on.
It doesn't, does it? But
hang on. I can look it up. That I can look up in my wizard.
Okay. The trouble is, I don't know how much I can trust this website.
Okay. Well, are you, so the Grand Prix data book, believe me, you can trust. Isn't this a fascinating podcast? Right, Michael from 16th. Yeah, so he definitely... Well, there were at least 24 cars on the grid for that, so forget that.
Okay.
Taki Inui was in that.
These are just drivers who won from way down.
Yeah, that doesn't count. I want to know if anyone won from last on the grid. Has anyone ever done last to first?
It doesn't seem like they have, does it?
See, I don't think so. But I might be wrong.
Okay, well, there we go. We'll have to do a little bit of research into that later on, won't we? Maybe that's an Instagram post. Has any F1 driver ever won from the very back of the grid? I'm amazed that with everything that's going on this season, it's Lewis and Max always there and also coming together, coming out of the pits and ending up on top of one another. They're just inseparable.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are inseparable. And I think it just speaks to how intense this title battle is during this season.
Yeah, and after whatever it's been, what's it been? I don't know how many rounds there have been, sort of, you know, they must be in the teens by now. But they're separated by 2 points. Now, the very interesting thing to me is Andrew Benson, who I think is, with Mark Hughes, the best commentator on Formula One, did a piece on the BBC, which is saying, you know, terrific, Lewis won 100, absolutely fantastic. But he actually thinks that Max is the more likely to be champion because, you know, Lewis really did get that win out of, you know, Lewis was, you know, never looked likely to win that race until there were like sort of 2 laps to go. And going forward, the problem is that, you know, the real Mercedes tracks are done now. So
interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, so for the last two, so Sochi and Monza were real Mercedes tracks. And there was a net gain in points to Mercedes to Lewis of 5.
Yeah, so it's not enough, is it?
It's not enough. And so, and you know, I'm sounding like I know what I'm talking about. I'm just literally taking this all from what Benson wrote. But the remaining tracks are all either absolute, you know, touch and go. Which stage you probably favour Red Bull because we think they've got the quicker car. Or there's one, Mexico, which apparently Mercedes have on the hope of hell in. So, the one thing we have learned from this season is you can take nothing for granted. And all predictions tend to go out the window. But sitting here right now, knowing what we know, you know, I think not long ago on this podcast, maybe 4 or 5 podcasts back, you and I were talking about this and we asked each other who we thought was going to do it. And you said Max and I said Lewis. I might just be in the Max camp now. I'm not talking about who I want to. I think I'm talking about who I think will. I'm not saying it's Max's to lose by any stretch, but I think, I don't know, it'd be interesting to go on. That's another thing we could do. We could go on, you know, when elections come along, I never listen to watch the polls or anything. I just go on to the bookies because they know.
And because
it's money. Yeah. And the bookies always tell a completely different story to the polls. And you know, they have a sort of like a vested interest, which sophologists don't. It would be interesting to go, and in fact, I'll do it straight off this podcast and see who's odds on to be world champion now. And I bet the money's on Max.
I think it is. I just think ultimately, overall, the Red Bull is quicker. Max is also, he does seem to be on fire at the moment. We're seeing just little silly mistakes from Lewis.
Lewis, I'm afraid, is in a one-man team. He doesn't have a teammate, effectively.
Well, that's something else to discuss, isn't it? Okay, so, all right, I think we're probably agreed now that Max is probably odds on, not least because he's taken his engine penalty.
So that's the other thing, you're absolutely right. It seems almost certain that Lewis will have to take one.
There are so many moving parts that it makes it impossible to predict, but it's so hard to know, isn't it? Because all it takes is, at the, you know, the start of a race, someone to pile into the side of Max, and all of a sudden it looks like Lewis is again, doesn't it? So absolutely. That's why we have to just keep watching.
And at the start of the season, you know, if you have that in one race, well, fine. You know, there are another 20-something races to go. But now there are only 7 races to go, and every one really bloody counts. You know, you can't have a calamity anymore because it's just so much harder. There's so much less time. There are so many fewer races in which to claw back the deficit. It's so exciting. Can we just talk about Lando for a bit?
Let's talk about Lando.
I'll try not to.
But there is a school of thought that says he was hot-headed or petulant or whatever for overruling his engineer.
I won't tell you who it is, but somebody got onto my Twitter and saying he was a brat and it was his fault and, you know, shouting shut up down the radio was, you know, if that had been Max, he would have been hauled over the coals for it and everything else. And I just think, give the boy a break. I mean, you're out there in the most impossible conditions trying to hold off, you know, a bloke who's won 99 Grand Prix and 7 world championships. You're in a slower car and you've got some bloke, you know, effectively, I don't know, just sort of reading out meaningless data to you. I think it is understandable at the age of 21 if you say whatever you feel needs to be said to get that bloke to be quiet as quickly as humanly possible, because the last thing you need is any kind of distraction. And the other thing I would say, and you know, this person said, oh, you know, Lando lost the race. Well, Lewis didn't want to come in either. Lewis ignored the first instruction to come in. Lewis thought that Slicks was the right. Lewis thought exactly the same thing as Lando. The difference was Mercedes overruled Lewis and McLaren didn't overrule Lando. You know, if Andrea Seidel had got on the blur and said, Lando, you come in this lap or you're out of a job, he'd come in, wouldn't he? So
it seems as though Mercedes knew that there was more rain coming.
They did.
And either they communicated that to Lewis or they just instructed him in no uncertain terms to come in. It seems as though McLaren left the decision in Lando's hands despite having better information.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And, you know, everybody has the same weather radar. I don't think that, you know, Mercedes had some great tactical advantage. They just called it better. And, you know, and if you think about it, you know, you've got whatever it was, 2-3 laps to go, and you think, well, I'm going to lose 28 seconds or whatever it is in the pit stop, and I'm already 3-0. That means I'm going to have to have any chance at all of winning this race, I'm going to have to catch this bloke by 7 or 8 seconds a lap. You'd think, well, that's insane. But actually, it was, well, as we all know, brilliant with the benefit of hindsight, it was the right thing to do. So, you know, I completely understand why Lando did what he did. I think he was very hard on himself. Which is what I also understand, but you know, there was no attempt by him to sort of say, oh, you know, the team let me down, you know, they should have overruled me. He took it on the chin, and he'll learn from it. But gee, I do think it was an absolutely golden opportunity. And you know, who knows with this insane season what's going to happen next, and maybe, you know, where they go next, Turkey, isn't it? You know, maybe something mad will happen then. But if you just look at things in terms of what is likely to happen, it is likely Lando won't win a race this season now, isn't it?
And he probably knows that.
Yeah.
However, McLaren came within a rain shower of winning back-to-back Grand Prix.
I know. It's great, isn't
it? And both of them, okay, some circumstance, but both would have been on merit, i.e. not just totally madcap chaotic Grand Prix, opportunist wins. They would have been on merit.
And they would. I mean, they did obviously require Max and Lewis to get together in Monza for that to be possible.
Daniel was leading, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's true. Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And yeah, yesterday would have absolutely have been on merit. But again, you know, Lando was on pole because quali was wet, I guess.
And, so, you know, some circumstance playing out. But
yeah, and when it's wet quali, it's always the driver who happens to be out when the conditions are optimal who gets pole position. So, you know, I think there are any number of people who will say, well, you know, Danny Ric was lucky to win in Monza and Lando was lucky to be in a position to win in Sochi. But yeah, I mean, you know, that team has just done so well, hasn't it?
Mm. Yeah, it wasn't the Ferraris up in that position, was it? It wasn't the Aston Martins or the Alpines. It was McLaren.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to investigate that a little bit. Exactly what have they managed to turn around?
Do you know anybody who might be able to write about something like that for us? I think
I've got someone on my mind.
Yes. I think Karun may be coming to our assistance there.
Yeah, we'll pass that one on to him. Okay, so I also want to talk about Bottas briefly. His blushes were very much spared by that late rain shower because of all the chaos that ensued. He was able to sneak up to, I think, fifth, wasn't it? Fifth or sixth.
Yeah.
Score some points.
He was
a reasonable
down, he
result.
Was down, but before that, he was like 14th.
My God. And you saw,
nowhere.
We all saw what Verstappen was able to do. And Bottas was in... That Mercedes round there is the quickest car. It's just full of corners, Sochi, that the Mercedes loves.
Yeah.
And he was quicker than anyone throughout Friday practice. Bottas was. And yet he could do nothing. And did you see his... He didn't even try to defend against Max.
No, that was... I thought that was terrible. You know...
Is that because he's on his way out? I don't know.
Well, it may be that he's completely demotivated. I mean, you know, what Karun says about this is that he's unbelievably quick. He's one of the quickest over a lap. But in a race, you know, certainly compared to Lewis, he just kills his tyres. So as you go through a race, his performance relative to Lewis just does that. And you get what you get, don't you? You get what we saw in Sochi. But you know, it's not enough, is it, to be quick over a lap? You know, you might get the odd fastest lap, but you know, on brand new tyres, fair enough. But if you win races by being quick over a race, and that is what Lewis has been so supremely good at. It's difficult for Lewis because, you know, Perez, I think, is a very solid number two. And, you know, it's not like they're a train out front with everybody else queued up behind. But, you know, I think he does his job well. And Lewis just doesn't have that kind of backing. So even when, quite tactically, whatever they say, you know, they stick him down the back with a new power unit, with a job to get in Max's way, hold him up, keep him behind you. And Max just drives straight past him, as he might drive past you or me. You know, that's not doing the job, is it?
No, it wasn't impressive. Okay, well, 100 Grand Prix wins for Lewis Hamilton. I mean, he was already out there on his own in terms of race wins ahead of Michael Schumacher in 91. But 100 Grand Prix wins, just a staggering achievement.
Okay, here's a stat which I've worked out all by myself and I haven't seen anybody else.
No, I was going to give you this stat.
Okay, go on. You give me the stat. I'll be amazed if it's the same one as I got.
Right, okay.
Go on, off you go.
How many Grand Prix have Brazilians won?
Sorry. I have absolutely no idea. How many Grand Prix have Brazilians won?
106.
Wow. Okay, so that's Ayrton.
Yep.
Emo.
Yeah, Nelson.
Nelson. Who else?
Massa. What? Won a few. I don't know.
That's amazing. Because we think of that country as being a fantastic, you know, place for... So Lewis will probably get there, won't he?
It looks like it. We think he's going to do another two seasons. He's got every opportunity to get there. However, I mean, these statistics are always skewed, aren't they? Because to exceed in statistics like that one, you need to be competitive. You need to have been competitive in the modern era. Because there are so many more races.
Exactly.
Drivers arguably have longer careers.
Yeah.
The cars are more reliable.
Yeah.
And so what that tells us, really, that statistic, is that apart from Massa, who didn't win the championship, Brazil hasn't had a top draw Grand Prix driver for a long, long time.
No. Okay, can I give you my stat?
Go on.
And again, this is also large or partly because there are so many more races. Nevertheless, Lewis has now won more races than Jackie Stewart did Grand Prix.
Mm, of course, because he did 99.
Jackie did 99, of which he won 27. Lewis has won 100. Jackie was in... So I think Jackie's career started in 64, 65. It certainly ended in 73. So Jackie did 9 or 10 seasons. Okay, Lewis is into, what, his 13th, 14th season now. But even so, to have won more races than Jackie Stewart, who is absolutely regarded as one of the finest drivers this sport has ever seen than Jackie did entire Grand Prix. It's just extraordinary.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Bravo. Congratulations to him. That is some achievement. And more to come, I would have thought. Okay. All right. Well, let's leave the Russian Grand Prix there and talk about a new TI initiative, I suppose, a young writer competition. Now, this is born out of necessity, isn't it? Because we've had two young writers on the intercooler and they've both been nicked.
Yeah.
So we need a new one. Well, do you want to pick up the story then?
Yeah. So this came, didn't it, from when we started the TI app. And if you're not on the app, you probably won't know about this because you won't see any of the stuff that our young writers have written. But when we started the app, we both felt it was incredibly important that one of the things that it should do, probably the most important thing that it would do, would be to bring on new talent. You know, I certainly felt that, you know, I was very lucky. I went to Autocar, which is the greatest training ground. And, you know, I kind of lucked and lied my way into it, but that was 30 something years ago. And, you know, and the world's a very different place. But it's a very hostile environment out there. And, you know, if people like us who are in a position to help don't help, then ultimately what happens is, you know, you don't get the quality of motoring journalists coming through. I mean, there will always be people who do it because there will always be a demand. Let's hope there's always a demand. But we don't want motoring journalists. We want absolutely top class motoring journalists. And, you know, and you don't get that without, frankly, having a place for your words to be published and having people who've done it a bit going through those words and pointing out, you know, how they might be improved. And so we had our first one was Yusuf Ashraf, absolute lunatic, you know, imported his own Alfa Giulia age 17 from Italy, which was just the sort of thing that that we wanted. And he didn't last long at all because, you know, Auto Express saw his talent and, you know, and that was that. That was, you know, bye-bye Yusuf, which, you know, we couldn't have been happier. And then, you know, Charlie Martin came to us. And his progression through us, if you know, people only see the finished product. They haven't seen the amount of times it's sort of been batted back between him and us. But, you know, it's fair to say that his early stuff was very raw. And then by the end of it, he was writing fantastic stuff, which we were proud to publish, not very changed at all. But more than that, he was having really, really good ideas, ideas that demonstrated not just his writing talent, but his passion and his knowledge of cars and the sport and everything else. And you know, to the extent that when Haymarket Publishing, which owns What Car, Classic and Sports Car, and our old gaff Autocar, advertised for a new apprentice, you know, Charlie was able to go to them, show them the body of work that had already been published. Frankly, you know, work that was, you know, was an awful lot better than it would have been if he hadn't been able to be, you know, brought on a bit by some people who've been around. And now he's gone too. You know, he's ended up, you know, and he is now an apprentice at what must be the biggest and certainly best publishing, maybe automotive publishing house in the country. And I just know that his career is going to be fantastic because he's got the knowledge and he's got the passion and he's got the talent. And that's what you need. We need another one. So we put out something on Instagram last week asking for people to send in people age 21 or less, to send in a 500-word story about anything they liked, as long as it was interesting and automotive and not likely to have been read anywhere else and their work alone. And we've already had a load of entries for it. And one person, because, you know, TI, as you know, is kind of like you and me and our backer. So we're not in a position to offer anyone a full-time job or even offer them a lot of work. But, you know, they will do some stuff for us and we will do for them what we did for Yusuf and for Charlie. And, you know, our fondest hope is that, you know, as soon as whoever this boy or girl comes on board, that, you know, the bigger, wider world who are in a position to provide, you know, a life-changing opportunity for these people, recognise the talent that we're fostering and then nick them again. You know, it's a really weird position to be in, isn't it? Hoping someone comes and steals your stuff. But that's where we are, because that's what it's for. And, you know, I'm just so proud of Yusuf and Charlie, who both listened and learned. And, you know, Charlie's been kind enough to write some, you know, very nice stuff for us in his sort of farewell piece. But ultimately, the success is his, and everything he gets will be deserved, because, you know, he had the raw material, and then he, through his own efforts and with, you know, some guidance from us, but through his own efforts, he crafted it and turned it into stuff that could be published, stuff that could be noticed, stuff that has ultimately, hopefully, as I said, resulted in a life-changing opportunity for him. And that makes us very happy.
Yeah, so the winner of this competition will have their work published on the Intercooler. They'll get paid for it. And it's, I don't know, I suppose it's sort of up to them how long they're around. Hopefully they'll find a job fairly soon after. It's worked a couple of times already. The window closes in a couple of weeks, so you've got plenty of time to get your entries in. Just send them to info@theintercooler.co.uk and we'll find them. If there are a few more details over on the Instagram site, you'll find it easily enough, at the Intercooler. But yeah, I mean, this is an important thing for both of us. I owe my start in this industry to winning a writing competition for young writers. It was a Motorsport News one, looking for a young rally journalist. The competition only ran once, and I won it. but it was a big help up, and it got me doing work for Motorsport News and Autosport when I was 18 or 19. And that was enough to demonstrate that I was enthusiastic enough, that I had a bit of experience, that I could write, so that when a job was advertised on a magazine, I had enough of a CV to go and apply for it and get the gig. So that was my route into the industry.
That's the thing, isn't it? You have to find a way of making your CV stand out. And goodness, if you've been published, if you've won something, if your work has been recognised by some people or somebody, that is itself, you know, credible, you know, that is often the difference, isn't it? So, yeah, get your entries in.
Get your entries in. Yeah, we're looking forward to reading them. Okay, I just want to ask you briefly about your Caterham. You've written about it a few times on the app. Some wonderful pieces about it, actually. But have you been using it recently?
Well, I did. The weekend just passed was meant to be. So me and a few motoring journalist mates of my generation rather than you, every year we go off and depending on who's hosting, you know, they come to me or I go to their houses or whatever, and we all turn up in silly old cars and spend a couple of days hooning about, you know, having a good time. Very sadly, because one of us has had a family member get ill, not able to do it this weekend. We'll reschedule it, and I'll look forward to doing that. But I was kind of in Caterham mode, and I just thought, well, I'm not just going to leave it in the shed. And so I did what I always sort of do, and I've never ever regretted it. I set an alarm for 5 o'clock. I hadn't driven the Caterham in the actual pitch black, because, you know, I've only had the car through the summer, and, you know, my early morning drives and those have been daylight. So I wanted to see what that was like. And I just got in it. I was probably in the car and on my way by 5:30 in the morning. And I just drove it out to the mountains for, I don't know, 1.5, 2 hours on my own, on totally empty, beautiful roads. And I can remember just sitting there thinking, I'm not sure there's anything I'd rather be in. I'm not sure how you could, I can see how you could go much faster, because it's not a particularly powerful car. It's only got, 135 horsepower. But I just couldn't really see how, within the context of what you can safely do on a public road, how you could have much more fun than that. You just sit there, and the noise and the immediacy and the gear change and the steering and, yeah, and this is just a silly old Caterham. It's a 1997 car, I think. As I said, without a particularly powerful engine, but it was just, it just made me very, very, very happy. And so I got to, I don't know if, well, anybody listening to this goes climbing in the Beacons, you'll know Storey Arms and the base of where most people set off to climb up Penny Fan. And so I sort of marched up to the top of Penny Fan, took a photograph of myself at the top, came back down again, got in the Caterham, and actually surprisingly, because by this stage it was sort of like, you know, it was completely light, it was probably 9, 10 o'clock, had another quite good run home. And yeah, I mean, sort of by the time most people are settling into their cornflakes, I just had this fantastic experience. Just this wonderful, and you know, you and I are so lucky. We get to go to so many places and do so much stuff in such amazing cars. But I don't really think that any of it has made me happier. And that's, let's face it, what it's all about. It's just about the smile on your face. Than just hooning around Wales on wonderful deserted roads in my own car, making wonderful noises. That's the car, not me. And yeah, I mean, it's just such a simple pleasure, isn't it? I mean, there's really very little to talk about. Because it's not like, you know, I was, you know, with anybody else or, you know, had any particular destination in mind. Although, you know, when I did get there, I went up a mountain because I thought, well, why wouldn't you? It was just driving for the sake of driving. It was just driving for sheer pleasure. And, you know, I think so many people do it the other way around. Like, you know, they think, oh, we've got this journey. We've got to go and see, you know, Auntie Jo wherever. And so we've got to go there at this particular time. How can we enjoy this drive? Well, we could take the old car and maybe figure out a bit of a route or something. And that's how people... I don't do that. I just think I want to go and drive a car. So what can I do to do that? Okay, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to get up really early. And I'm just going to do that. And you never regret it. You know, have a snooze in the afternoon. Make up the, you know, if you lose some sleep, get the time back. And, you know, I'm lucky, as you are, to live quite close to some decent roads. And just go and drive for the sake of it. You know, if you are making your, if you are adapting your drive to something that you've already got to do, it's always going to be compromised. But if you're just driving for the pleasure of it, let us say, for instance, for one reason or whatever, you get completely held up by something, turn round, turn right, turn left, take another road, doesn't matter, because you're not going anywhere. You're just driving for pleasure. And it makes me very happy. So there you go. So I did drive the Caterham, and it is fabulous.
There's definitely something in that. Driving without a specific destination or a time limit even in mind, it is wonderful. It makes such a difference. You just sort of choose where you go. You think, oh, well, I'll go over that way this time. I've not tried this road before. And somehow it feels totally different to...
It feels liberating.
Driving with a destination in mind. It's liberating. Yeah, it's brilliant. I do love that. Good. Well, yeah, I mean, you're a lucky boy to have a Caterham in the shed, able to pull it out when the weather's good and you feel like a drive.
Yeah, but it's not like, you know, it's a, I don't know, a 620S or anything. It's not like a, you know, a 50, 60, you know, it's a very affordable car. You know, I'm lucky, it's a nice car and it's in good nick and everything else. But, you know, this is not massive money. This is, you know, very small hot hatch money. And you can have a thing which is more rewarding than any number on those sorts of roads than any number of hypercars. You know, you can be on there with 1,000 horsepower and not have as much fun as I had with 135. And I absolutely mean that. Yeah.
Mm. They're great things, aren't they?
Fabulous.
Okay. All right. Well, talking of 1,000 horsepower.
Ah, yes.
Just to finish this podcast off, we haven't, across all of TI, we haven't even mentioned the Porsche Mission R concept, which emerged at the recent motor show in Munich, wasn't it? But it's an interesting thing that I think we should discuss. It's actually it is a concept car. It previews a one-make racing car that Porsche is supposedly going to get on the racetracks in 25, but it's all electric. So people think it actually previews an electric Cayman several years down the road, presumably. But it's technically it's quite interesting, I suppose. I mean, we'll come to how interesting an electric racing series is and how many people, particularly a customer series, how many people want to do that? I don't know. There must be some, but it can't be too many. So this thing has twin electric motors. It's actually a Taycan powertrain, more or less, or using the motors at least. 603 horsepower in sort of normal mode, up to 1,073 in qualifying trim. So, yeah, I mean, staggering numbers. We're just used to those numbers now, though, aren't we, from any sort of high-performance electric car. It's got an 80 to 85 kilowatt-hour battery, and it weighs Around 1,500 kilograms.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean... sorry.
So, yeah, I mean, it's probably about the same, similar amount, actually, I suppose, to a Cayman, but it's a racing car rather than a road car. So what does that tell us a road car might weigh? What, another 100, 200 kilos more, something like that?
Might do. Might do. But, I mean, this is all quite a long way away, isn't it? You know, they're talking about racing it in, I think, 26. So we're still... It's still 5 years out. I think it's a really interesting thing. I think that, you know, what interests me is that Porsche has no intention of... So the point about the car and the way that it's spec'd is they want it to lap at about the same sort of speed as a Carrera Cup car. And so that made me think, oh, it's going to replace Carrera Cup. But Porsche says that they have no intention of that. They said that they'll race Carrera Cup for as long as they possibly can. And now that that series... is it all Carrera Cup rounds or just Super Cup? Can't remember. But anyway, they now use synthetic fuel in Carrera Cup. So, you know, it is a lot greener than it was. I think the point about it, and particularly talking about your idea of, you know, how interested will people be in an all-electric series, I think at a certain level, it won't be drivers so much as sponsors. You know, there will be... It's all about companies who wish to have a presence in motorsport, but also wishing to, you know, be seen to be putting their environmental good citizen, you know, credentials to the fore. And even with synthetic fuel, I suspect there's going to come a time when sponsoring stuff with internal combustion engines is just going to fall out of fashion. And then, you know, well, what do you have? Well, you have a car here which looks amazing. It's just as quick as a cup car. And yet, it is environmentally saintly, and I think that's the sell. I think that's the pitch. And I mean, for myself, I'd find that, you know, more interesting than Formula E. I just would, you know, particularly if, as appears to be the case, it's based on the next generation pure EV Cayman and Boxster. I think it has a relevance and an interest there that Formula E just isn't going to have. So, yeah, I think it's interesting. I think it is interesting. I'm still struggling to get excited about, you know, about electric racing. I saw that somebody had an all-electric track day. I don't know if you read that. And people were going around, not just in sort of Taycans, but they were going around in ID3s and that sort of thing. And, you know, fair enough. I'll be interested to see if they have another. I mean, yeah, you can shout and scream, can't you? But that's the world we are moving towards. And we are going to have to find a way of deriving some kind of enjoyment from it. So, you know, I welcome it. I think, you know, the mission are, I think, you know, it's interesting. I understand why they're doing it. Does it thrill me to my bones? Not yet. But, you know, the world will seem a very different place in 25, 26. And there won't be as many alternatives. And there will be many other more cars like it. We will have come to accept it and be used to it in a way we just aren't at the moment. Yeah, interesting car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're targeting 40-minute races, which is, you know, I think that's quite good.
That's going to be like longer than a Carrera Cup race, or maybe about the same time period.
Yeah, so it's not exactly Mickey Mouse 10-15 minute thing, is it? So, yeah, I mean, if they're able to achieve that, then crack on. Yeah, good. Okay, all right, well, we'll leave that episode of the podcast there. Remember to rate and review the podcast, please. That does make a big difference. And go and check out the Intercooler app as well. Just download it, start your free trial. Yeah, you'll like it. We think it's good.
I should have done this at the start. Can I just do a quick shout out for a character called Dan Jackson, who contacted me on Instagram saying, why haven't you done anything on the Mission R? We should have done, and we have now. So thank you, Dan.
Box ticked. Okay, thank you, everybody. And as ever, we'll be back to talk to you again next week.
Look forward to it. All the best.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.